This is State of the Union, the District Council 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. I'm Chris Policano. DC 37 is New York City's largest public employee union with 125,000 members and nearly 50,000 retirees. We are part of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, also known as AFSCME. We're on the air Sundays at 8 p.m. We rebroadcast on Wednesdays at 1:30 p.m. We're also available as a podcast. You simply go to the podcast app on your smartphone or tablet and search for DC 37 State of the Union. And there are now more ways to stay in touch with us than ever before. You can check out the website, www.dc37.net. Follow us on social media, on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. If you have any comments about the show or would like to promote a community event, please drop us a line at stateoftheunion@dc37.net. That's stateoftheunion, one word, at dc37.net. All right, this is this show is going to be a labor of love for me because we have the opportunity to have in the studio with us someone who's been involved with DC 37 for more than 30 years. He's been active as a city employee for more than 40 years. Jim Tuccarelli is the retired president of Local 1320 of the New York City Sewage Treatment and Senior Sewage Treatment Workers. Welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, Chris, how's it going?
I'm going fine. I'm so glad just to have this opportunity. We're going to take this show and we're going to talk about, so often we talk about the need for folks to understand where we come from and what the beginnings were and how we move that to the present. And as someone who has been involved with pretty much every significant event in the last 35 years in the history of DC 37, I thought maybe it would be a good idea to talk to you about the world that we live in. So first of all, I want to talk about your personal involvement, both as a city worker and as a union official. So why don't we just start with how you got involved, both what got you to city employment and then how did you get to the union?
Back in the early 70s, I was an electrician by trade. That kind of teetered out when there was no work at all and everybody was on furloughs. And I was starting to raise a family at that point. And I had a couple of babies that I needed to take care of and my wife. And there was no work. I was collecting unemployment. And one day when I was down at unemployment, they said, we need you to go for this job interview as a sewage treatment worker under the CETA program, a Comprehensive Employment Training Act that Jimmy Carter put in place. And I said, sewage treatment worker? I'm an electrician.
That's I mean, what the heck?
And then said, no qualifications are. Anybody who's got 3 years in a trade is eligible. If you don't go, we're cutting off your unemployment benefits. Okay, where you want me to be?
I'm there.
You know, I'm in. And what happened was that program was only an 18-month program. It was supposed to be to retrain people from one trade to another. When I got there, I needed to get involved with the union right away because there were no civil service exams or anything scheduled for there. And the clock was ticking for anybody that was in that group. We had 18 months, and then after that, I was going to be back out on the street again because the economy was still really wasn't where
this was the 70s.
It should be. It was the 70s. We had the president telling the city of New York, you know, go screw yourself.
Right.
And, you know, it was tough times. So I got involved with the union. It goes all the way back to Lillian Roberts at that time, who was an associate down at DC 37 that was in charge of getting city government to start holding exams. I got an education in the early days. We did things a little bit different than we do now. So civil disobedience was, yeah, that was it. Go for it. And unfortunately, or fortunately, I don't know. I've always been a big guy. Fit the character of a union thug. And I was assigned to with one other big guy, to make sure that Lillian got up the steps of City Hall to present her stuff. And back there in the 70s, you had the line of cops that were not afraid to swing their baton. So I wound up with a few lumps and a few black and blues. But Lillian got up the steps of City Hall and was able to make her presentation.
And again, the presentation that she was going to make was about civil service exams?
We have all of these folks now that are working for the city.
Right.
That the feds have been paying their salaries for the last 18 months. They've been doing a fantastic job. What are you going to do about it? Start holding the exams. Start figuring out how we're going to get them into the workforce and how you guys are going to pay for it. That was the message.
And that was successful.
Yes. Yes, it was.
And then how did you get more involved with the union?
I got more involved with the union because, unfortunately, the leadership in my local 1320 at the time, didn't want to hear about us cedar humps. That's what we were called. Somebody gave you a job. We all had to take a civil service exam. It's not fair. You don't belong here, get lost. And I'm saying, but I want to take an exam. What are you guys doing about getting us an exam? And could make no head or tails with these folks. And we actually banded together and said, you know what? When was the last time there was an election here? And what we got was hemina. And we did some research and found out that they weren't holding elections in a timely fashion, and they had a call for an election. So naturally, okay, big mouth, what are you going to do now? So somebody nominated me to run for the executive board. We put together a great slate with a guy named John Toto,
okay,
who was my mentor.
Okay.
John had worked for District Council 37 for many, many years. He was brought in by Jerry Werf and was a division director. The last position he held was in the white collar division. And he was really a knowledgeable guy, true blue collar and true grit. And
he worked for the union.
For DC 37. Until it was perceived by Vic Gottbaum, who was the executive director at the time, that he was not loyal to Vic, because Vic was in a battle royale with Jerry Werf. Jerry Werf is the guy who put DC-37 together originally. He was the original executive director that we had there, and he did all of the organizing and brought all the groups in. Such a great guy that when the vacancy opened up, he became the president of the International Union, AFSCME.
Right. So he went to Washington.
He went to Washington, and he was doing a great job. And we were all loyal to him, especially the blue-collar guys, because he organized all of us, because we fit the role of the union thug that you needed at the time.
Nothing like a stereotype.
to get things done and make an impression and show that, you know, union power, union strength. Vic got into a battle with Jerry. He wanted to be the president of the International Union, and the politics took over. And it was perceived that John, a staff member, was with some of the other local presidents and folks that were there in DC 37, were not supportive of Vic, were loyal to Jerry, and Vic fired a lot of those folks, including John Toto. So John's lines originally, when he was working for the city of New York, before he was brought into the DC 37 position, was a sewage treatment worker.
Gotcha.
Up at the Bowery Bay plant. He went back to his civil service position once the union fired him. We scooped him up because a guy like that with the knowledge like that was unbelievable, and we put him on our slate to run as the president, and that's where
This was the revolution of cedar workers because the local that they were in was not responsive to their needs, and there was some internal politics that got John Toto to the local.
Right.
And then you learned under John Toto.
Yes.
He was now the new president.
The president of the local, and I was one of his executive board members.
And what was that experience like? I just...
Went from knowing absolutely nothing about the trade union movement,
right,
to being tutored about the history of where we came from, where we need to go, communicating with the members. John just, he was a wealth of knowledge. He really was. And it was amazing learning from him. And I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about it now, because it was some... I was a young guy, I really was, and to have somebody like this as my mentor and bring me in was unbelievable.
Which is something that we're trying to create at all aspect unions right now. With the next wave of movement that we have
absolutely.
The importance of, and sometimes that's not easy to do, because sometimes folks don't like to share their knowledge, and that can be a problem. You've got to break through that mindset that the young folks need to be encouraged. I think most of the time you see a mentee like yourself and a local president, but it's not, we haven't widened it out as much as we could, I think. Would you agree with that?
It's a two-way street, because you have to understand, you have the mindset of the old-timers that's afraid to give up. I learned,
right.
I know. Why should I give it to you? Because you may run against me, and then I won't be the president
right.
anymore.
Right.
And you have the mindset of some of us that John Toto always taught me, and I believe in, is you got to share that wealth. You got to share that knowledge, because the members don't know where the benefits that we have came from, the struggles that we had to get them. They just think that somebody waved the magic wand and we've got all of this vacation time and we got all of these holidays, paid holidays, and we've got paid sick leave and we have benefits, that they're entitled to that. That's no entitlement. I mean, we worked our butts off and struggled to get to that point, and you need to let them know where that is.
Exactly.
You know, it's important to history.
We're talking with the recently retired local 1320 New York City sewage treatment and senior sewage treatment workers president, Jim Tucciarelli. How did you come to be president of the local after John Toto must have retired, or he must have?
No, what had happened was in 1983, okay, the revolution started in 80 is when I first took office, and in 83, John turned around and tried to protect his pension time that he had in AASHTO. So he worked out with the International Union, Jerry Wirth. We were doing a big organizing campaign in Ohio, and John was hired back by the International so he could protect his pension and ran the campaign. So a week and a half before he was leaving, John got a hold of me, called me in. He says, kid, next week you're going on release time. You have to come over here because, okay, John, what do you need done? Well, you're going to be the president of the local because I'm leaving. A week? What, are you kidding me? So on December 8th, 1983, I took over as the president of the local and been there for 35 years. I just recently retired January 8th of this year.
And I got to say, there was an event recently in your honor, a fete of folks from the union and from the city side. You were honored by commissioners of the past. I must say that I was very impressed by the commissioner whose name, Vincent
Sapienza.
Vincent Sapienza pointed out that you were one of the key people in the past 35, 40 years in terms of improvements to and making the wastewater treatment system of New York City work, which when you think about how much waste there is in the city of New York and how vital that is, that's really quite a legacy you've got there. I mean, you and that means that with management, you were able to get them out of their own way when they had ideas that, you know, they thought were great, but that you, you know, as a person who is on the line says, this is how we should be doing this, or here's an idea for how to do this. I mean, how does the development of the waste, what is the input that you're giving in terms of this incredible thing that has to be done every day?
What we were able to do is, and there's times that you still need to play the union thug. Okay?
You're making me nervous, James.
But you're safe. You're on my side.
Okay.
But you have to, you know, we evolved, and it was a great leadership team that was over at DEP that I was able to turn around and say, listen, you're going to keep doing things that you, the way you want to do them. It doesn't work for us. I got more guys than you have ideas. So why don't you start listening to the workers? Why are you spending all of this money on the equipment that is failing, is not working, that it's constantly breaking down, that we have to, you know, modify and work on? Why don't you listen to us? And at the time, QWL, Quality Work for Life program, was put together and got the local heavily involved with it, where management and labor sat down and came and did some brainstorming, and that's what we did. And it revolutionized the way they were building wastewater treatment plants. Operators were actually put in place to deal with the folks that were designing and telling them, don't put it there because there's only 12 inches in between the wall and there, and I can't fit to get in there
right.
To, you know, do it later on. It looks great on paper, but I'm not going to be able to maintain that piece of equipment.
And you have to make sure that there is a safe environment for the workers. I mean,
that's the, you know, the pretext that we had, you know, that I always had that gun in my belt saying that my guys aren't going in there because it's not safe, and you have a responsibility to provide us with a safe, healthy and safe work environment to go in. That's the law. You have to do that. That was how we were able to do things and get things moved around. I mean, I've shut down plants. I've shut down facilities. It wasn't a job action. It was an unsafe condition that was there. And I had great people behind me, Gia Mejia. I had Lee Clark from our health and safety unit, DC-37. That stood behind me 100% and would call the executive director, and he'd be saying, what the hell is going on here? I'm getting a call from OLR that 13-20, there's a job action going on. It's not a job action. It's an unsafe condition because of this, this, and this. And
now, one of the areas that you disagreed with management on, and which was a pretty contentious fight, was the city's movement towards privatization on certain wastewater treatment functions, I guess. They brought in a company called Veolia, which was a French company, I believe.
Before Veolia came in,
yes,
in the 80s, when we had our wonderful Mayor Giuliani.
Yes,
I think everybody remembers him,
right, yes.
Okay? The big push throughout the country, AFSCME was dealing with this throughout the country, was to privatize wastewater treatment plants. You had all of these French companies like Veolia coming in and saying, we're going to pluck down X amount of cash. We're going to pay you X amount of dollars. We're going to take over your wastewater treatment facilities or your water supply facilities. And it's going to be a 20-year contract. At the end of 20 years, we turn it back over to you. But for the meantime, we're going to take away all your headaches. You won't have to make any capital investments on it. We'll do all of this.
It was okay? It seemed so like a great idea, right?
It sounded like a great idea on paper.
Right.
So you had politics that came into it at the time, all right? You had the president of the city council, Mr. Vallone, who said, you know, to generate the money, what we're going to do is we're just going to sell off three wastewater treatment plants completely. Sell them to these privateers, and they could have them, and they can own them. Giuliani wanted to privatize all of them. And I, you know, started a movement.
Giuliani wanted to privatize everything.
Privatize everything.
So this was one leg of a multi-leg.
Faceted. We were fighting battles from every angle.
Right.
Okay? Some of them wanted to sell. Others wanted to privatize. And that was the end of it. You know, they weren't even talking to the union at that point. This is something they were going to do, and that's it. Again, we were able to get the international union involved, because I had a brainstorm. Let's go down and let's talk to not only the IRS, but the EPA, and I'm just a little, you know, local 600 guys. How do I get in down there? Got the international union. My buddy Lee Saunders was, you know, one of the chief of staff down there, and President McEntee said, listen, get him into a meeting. So we got on a train, and we all went down there to this high-level meeting, and I turned around and said, these plants were built with money from the Clean Water Act.
Okay.
Before you sell anything or before you privatize anything, they got to come up with the money to refund the cost of the money that was laid out by the taxpayers, and that's got to be where the IRS comes in and figures out what type of a refund is due to every taxpayer in the city of New York.
Which is a big bill, I would imagine.
And they stood there saying, and that threat went away, thank God.
But that was a long fight, though. I mean,
it was a long. Everything is a long fight. Everything is a long fight. Nothing happened in a blink of an eye.
We're talking with Jim Tuccarelli, who, in addition to being, I keep saying you were the retired local 1320 president, but in fact, you were an executive board member of DC 37. You are part of the judicial panel of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, which puts you in various jurisdictions across the country, helping resolve disputes and other issues. So you've been doing a lot of things in the union for these last 35 years, in addition to the important work of being a local president.
Correct. And the most important thing of all is being Santa.
And being,
we'll talk about that. We'll talk about that a little later.
I want to talk a little bit about DC 37. When I came to DC 37 in 1999, it was a very difficult time in the life of the union, and there was someone from D.C. had come in to take over the union on behalf of the international. That person was Lee Saunders, who's now the president. He came in as administrator. I didn't know what the heck an administrator was. I had just been I had come out from a nonprofit organization to interview with Lee. He hired me. I did not know or did not appreciate at the time the depth of the trouble at DC 37, where in fact there was a corruption scandal. You were one of the guys who was keeping it together at a very difficult time in the life of the organization. Let's talk a little bit about that in terms of what happened and how we got through that. So just take it from wherever you want.
My career was going really good. I was solidified as a local president. I was actually being accepted in the fold with the politics at the council at that point, because I was always an outsider as a, you know, a supporter of John Toto. So for the longest time, I had that stigmatism that I was the bad guy. 1994, there was an election, and I was elected in January of 95. As a executive board member of DC 37. I had a voice now at the table. I was using my voice. Everything was going great as far as I was concerned. My life was in a good place. And all of a sudden, we start hearing the rumblings in the late 90s that, you know, there's corruption, there's possible voter fraud. The international is coming in. They're taking over the council, which they did. You're right. Lee Saunders was appointed as an administrator. Jerry McEntee found that there was enough of a basis to not only put the council on the administratorship, but a lot of the locals that were there. My life was upside down at that point.
As were other members of the executive board. As was everyone in the building in union headquarters, right?
Nobody knew what the hell was going on, really. And Jerry McEntee came up to address all of us and tell us what he was doing. And I personally made a plea to him saying, this is my life. Under administratorship, the executive board was gone. Everything was gone if he wanted to. And I tried to explain to him that, please, let us continue to have some type of say and don't cast all of us into the same kettle as some that may be corrupt. And that's what they did. They kept the board in place, but Lee was the total authoritarian that he could do whatever he wanted to. And as I had to remind a lot of my board members when I started getting a little antsy when Lee was doing things, he is God.
That's right.
When God speaks, you right. listen to him, and we're going to get through this.
And you also, I mean, when you say he did a few things, he had to implement financial reforms, and he had to put rules into place that made it possible for the union to regroup and move forward.
They totally reformed from within, which is great that we were able to do it from within, because there was all sorts of criminal investigations going on at the time. And if it got that bad, we could have had the feds come in, the Department of Labor, and killed us all. So McEntee said,
The president of AFSCME said
to the Department of Labor, through his general counsel, give us a shot of cleaning this up, dealing with this. And if we can't do it, then you guys do what you have to do. Let the feds come in. And there was a no-tolerance policy that was set up. They did multiple audits. The international came in and did an audit. They had KPMG, a private company, come in and do a forensic audit. And if you took a look at some of my earlier pictures, I had a full head of gray, a full head of hair was all black, and now it's nay and gray. And part of it was going through a forensic audit. They look at every nickel and dime with the attitude that something was done wrong. And it was a tough time. But
I'm going to end this segment. That's about all the time we've got for this show. I thank you very much for being part of this conversation. We're going to continue this conversation. We're going to go to two parts, and the second part you will hear next week. We're talking with Jim Tuccarelli, who is the retired president of Local 1320 of DC 37, executive board member, a member of the AFSCME judicial panel, and a stalwart in the DC 37, in the legions of DC 37. Thank you very much. That's all the time we've got for this show. I'm Chris Policano. Till next time, ciao.